7-Eleven Harry Houdini. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by BunnySlippers.com and FoundItemClothing.com. Hey, Australia, New Zealand, anywhere that is Chile right now. Keep your feet warm and cute this winter with some Cthulhu slippers from BunnySlippers.com and get your favorite screen-accurate shirts from your favorite films found from FoundItemClothing.com. PGTTCM is written and edited by Daniel Spitzer and audio by Seraphie and Daniel Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. PGTTCM is also part of the Dark Myths Collective. Learn more at darkmyths.org. Check out a cool podcast like our podcast.
Also, I'd like to recommend Astounding Legends. Ooh. And then there's also like Blurry Photos. Uh-huh. And let's not forget stuff like History of Pirates, Hysteria 51, Campfire Radio Theater.
Oh, man.
All kinds of great ones. Ooh, that's ooh, Mad good. Scientist Podcast. Ooh. That was a really good one.
I should listen to that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of my personal favorites of all of the folks, besides Blurry Photos, which is my favorite besides ours, mm-hmm. is Our Fake History. Mm-hmm. Secret Transmission Podcast is pretty cool, too. Anyway, Morbid Podcast. There's all kinds of great stuff on Dark Myths. Check them out. Welcome to the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
We are engaged in an ongoing discussion of the Cthulhu mythos and its timeline regarding Earth. To be part of it, contact us at pgttcm@gmail.com or join us on Twitter. Just search for PGTTCM.
Google it, whatever.
Yeah. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe to PGTTCM on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Google has Google Podcasts now, too.
Oh, cool. Click our patron button on pgttcm.podbean.com for early release episodes, unique audio content, otherwise unreleased banter. Contact us about the sticker cult or donate a few dollars to paypal.me/pgttcm.
Greetings, listeners. It is we, DB and Seraphie, here to talk to you once again about the Cthulhu mythos, its books, its monsters, its unfortunate human casualties, its timeline in general, and even its tangential bits like the dreamlands, or things of a weird nature, or things that are Lovecraftian leaning.
From the creation of our galaxy to the death of our sun, this is an exploration of the Cthulhu mythos from the perspective of humanity's concept of history.
Learn of terrible meetings in lonely places, of cyclopean ruins, in which vast staircases lead down to abysses of nighted secrets, of complex angles that lead through invisible walls to other regions of time and space, and of hideous explorations in remote and forbidden places, on other worlds, and in other space-time continua.
Check out the show's merch table at pgttcm.threadless.com. You can find lots of cool shirts and mugs and stuff there, all original designs by DB Spitzer, or check out the store link on pgttcm.com.
Remember to check out the books we review on amazon.com, and why not use our Amazon link and look for the Strange Behaviors Anthology by Nihilism Revisited, and look for the Micro Story by me, DB Spitzer. The People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos starts now. Okay.
Hi, DB.
Hey, how's it going, Sarah?
It's going pretty good. So we've been exploring a lot of stories lately.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and today we are, of course, going to talk about my favorite escape artist, Harry Houdini, which, yeah. You know, I'm not alone in this. Lots of people, and he's got a whole, sort of mythology around him anyway.
Yeah. But to say Harry Houdini is your favorite escape artist, that's like saying, oh, Muhammad Ali's my favorite boxer.
Well, I guess he's my favorite boxer, too, because I don't really follow the sport.
Yeah, and my point being, how many escape artists do you follow?
Well, that's...
Chris Angel!
No.
Is he even an escape artist?
No.
I just know that he's kind of a joke.
And, like, if for close-up magic, I like Penn and Teller a lot, you know? But, I mean, I've, never even seen them in person. And, frankly, close-up magic is one of those things that you really should see in person for it to be astounding, because... Of course, everything on TV can be faked.
Yeah.
Including everything.
Speaking of magicians, do you know who I saw when I was 9 years old?
Ooh, who?
At the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in downtown Portland, Oregon.
No, who?
That would be David Copperfield.
Oh my God, really?
The magic of David Copperfield brought to you. David Copperfield. Oh, and this was like not too far after he'd done the making the Statue of Liberty disappear.
Right.
But it was not before he made the Wall of China disappear.
Man.
Or no, he didn't make the Wall of China disappear. He walked through the Wall of China.
Do you mean the Great Wall of China?
The Great Wall of China.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to be confused with the shitty Wall of Mongolia.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, we can talk about the Great Wall of China if you want to, and like how walls don't exist, or like aren't a good solution for keeping people out.
Yeah, well, but that's not what we're here for.
No. Let's talk about something else.
Let's talk about some magic guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his history.
Mm-hmm.
And how about maybe that time that H.P. Lovecraft ghost wrote a story for him.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I think is really interesting about Harry Houdini is that, like H.P. Lovecraft, he was never really into the mysticism that was really all over in that time period. Like, people were really into talking to the dead, like seances and stuff.
Spiritualism.
Like, yeah, spiritualism. It was a huge fad at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And Harry Houdini was engaged in, like, disproving a lot of it. Like,
oh,
that
definitely.
That was one of his
definitely.
Whole things.
Yeah, Blurry Photos has a fair amount when they talk about, like, ectoplasm. They have an episode, I can't remember if it's about ectoplasm or spirituality or mm-hmm. hokum or whatever, but they talk about what ectoplasm was that these spiritualists would use, and it would be, like, buttered muslin that they would, like, pull out of pockets.
Oh,
possibly
like
orifices.
Cheeks. Oh, gross.
To represent, you know, spirits have been here.
Oh, weird,
yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. And then that turned into ectoplasm as we know it via Ghostbusters.
Oh, where it's like goop all over the place.
Yeah.
Slimer.
Yep.
You know, Slimer wasn't, I mean, like, while he was represented in the first movie,
yes.
He didn't really gain a personality until the cartoon series.
Oh, no. It's like the Ghostbusters in general didn't really gain. Mm-hmm. Personality until the cartoon series.
Yeah.
And when people think about Ghostbusters of a certain age,
yeah.
I believe I'm gonna guess. I'm gonna guess. I don't have the hard empirical data to back this up.
We should do a survey.
Oh yeah, we should do the survey of when you think about Ghostbusters, when you think about the Ghostbusters mm-hmm. individual personalities,
yeah.
Do you think of the movie or do you think of the cartoon?
Yeah, and then we should do that in an age base. So like, how old are you and what do you think about this?
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, this is our next podcast.
Oh, totally.
Ghostbuster mm-hmm. ages.
Nope.
What about the Rockford Files?
Oh my gosh, are we pitching that now?
I've pitched it in the past to the show. And there's even like a Rockford Files drinking game bingo card on
Ooh.
PGTTCM if you dig around in the archives.
Oh, man. Well, we should definitely put that on the forefront more.
Yeah. Hey, if you're listening to this and you want to hear a podcast about the Rockford Files.
Yeah, get in touch with us.
Get in touch with us. Tell us that you want to hear that. And
yeah.
We'll definitely make sure it happens.
Yes. Yes.
We're also thinking about doing a podcast about preserving foods.
Yeah, you know? That's another one. Like not just like, you know, drying foods or something, but like all the ways that food can
all
be
right.
preserved.
Harry Houdini, born Eric Weiss, later Eric Weiss or Harry Weiss, March 24th, 1874 to October 31st, 1926, was a Hungarian-born American illusionist and stunt performer, noted for his sensational escape acts. He first attracted notice in vaudeville in the U.S. and then as Harry Handcuff Houdini on a tour of Europe, where he challenged police forces to keep him locked up. Soon, he extended his repertoire to include chains, ropes slung from skyscrapers, straitjackets underwater, and having to escape from and hold his breath inside a sealed milk can with water in it. Wow. In 1904, thousands watched as he tried to escape from special handcuffs commissioned by London's Daily Mirror, keeping them in suspense for an hour. Another stunt saw him buried alive and only just able to claw himself to the surface, emerging in a state of near breakdown. While many suspected that these escapes were faked, Houdini presented himself as the scourge of fake spiritualists. As president of the Society of American Magicians, he was keen to uphold professional standards and expose fraudulent artists. He was also quick to sue anyone who imitated his escape stunts. Houdini made several movies, but quit acting when it failed to bring in money. He was also a keen aviator and aimed to become the first man to fly a plane to Australia. Houdini chronicled his debunking exploits in his book, A Magician Among the Spirits, co-authored with C. M. Eddy Jr.
Let's start that paragraph again.
Houdini chronicled his debunking exploits in his book, A Magician Among the Spirits, co-authored with C. M. Eddy Jr., who was not credited. These activities cost Houdini the friendship of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Doyle, a firm believer in spiritualism during his later years, refused to believe any of Houdini's exposés. Doyle came to believe that Houdini was a powerful spiritualist medium and had performed many of his stunts by means of paranormal abilities and was using these abilities to block those of other mediums that he was, quote, debunking, unquote. This disagreement led to the two men becoming public antagonists, and Sir Arthur came to view Houdini as a dangerous enemy. In 1926, Harry Houdini hired H.P. Lovecraft and his friend C.M. Eddy Jr. to write an entire book about debunking religious miracles, which was to be called The Cancer of Superstition. Houdini had earlier asked Lovecraft to write an article about astrology, for which he paid $75. The article does not survive. Lovecraft's detailed synopsis for cancer does survive, as do three chapters of the treatise written by Eddy. Houdini's death derailed the plans, as his widow did not wish to pursue the project.
Mystery attracts mystery. Ever since the wide appearance of my name as a performer of unexplained feats, I have encountered strange narratives and events which my calling has led people to link my interests and activities. Some of these have been trivial and irrelevant, some deeply dramatic and absorbing, some productive of weird and perilous experiences, and some involving me in extensive scientific and historic research. Many of these matters I have told and shall continue to tell freely, but there is one of which I speak with great reluctance, and which I am now relating only after a session of grilling persuasion from the publishers of this magazine, who had heard vague rumors of it from other members of my family.
Imprisoned with the Pharaohs, called Under the Pyramids in draft form, also published as Entombed with the Pharaohs, is a short story written by American fantasy author H.P. Lovecraft, ever hear the guy? In February 1924, commissioned by Weird Tales founder and co-owner J.C. Henneberger? The narrative tells a fictionalized account in the first-person perspective of an allegedly true experience of escape artist Harry Houdini. Set in 1910 in Egypt, Houdini finds himself kidnapped by a tour guide who resembles an ancient pharaoh and thrown down a deep hole near the Great Sphinx of Giza. While attempting to find his way out, he stumbles upon a gigantic ceremonial cavern and encounters the real-life deity that inspired the building of the Sphinx.
I saw the horror and unwholesome antiquity of Egypt, and saw the grisly alliance that it had always had with tombs and temples of the dead. I saw the phantom processions of priests with the heads of bulls, falcons, cats, and ibises. Phantom processions marching interminably through subterraneous labyrinths and avenues of titanic propylia, besides which a man is as a fly, and offering unnameable sacrifices to indescribable gods. Stone colossi marched an endless night and drove herds of grinning androsphinxes down to the shores of the illimitable stagnant rivers of pitch. And behind it all, I saw the ineffable malignity of primordial necromancy, black and amorphous, and fumbling greedily after me in the darkness to choke out the spirit that had dared to mock it by emulation. In my sleeping brain, there took a shape of a melodrama of sinister hatred and pursuit. I saw the black soul of Egypt signaling me out and calling me in audible whispers, calling and luring me, leading me with the glitter and the glamour of the seraphic surface, but ever pulling me down to the age-mad catacombs and horrors of its dead and abysmal, pharaohic heart.
Lovecraft accepted the job because of the money he was offered in advance by Hindenburg. The result was published in the May, June, July 1924 edition of Weird Tales. Although it was credited solely to Houdini until 1939, till the 1939 reprint. Despite Lovecraft's use of artistic license, Houdini enjoyed the tale, and the two men collaborated on several smaller projects prior to the latter's death in 1926. Imprisoned with the Pharaohs has been suggested as an early influence on author Robert Bloch, and as anticipating the cosmic themes in Lovecraft's later work, including The Shunned House. Told from the first-person perspective of escape artist Harry Houdini is a fictionalized account of an encounter that he claims to have experienced while on vacation in Egypt in January 1910. Enlisting the services of a guide named Abdul Reis al-Dragman, Houdini is taken on a tour of Cairo and eventually forced to break up a conflict between his guide and a Bedouin leader by the name of Al-Ziz. Dragoman enlists Houdini to help him settle the fight by way of a custom of great antiquity in Cairo, a boxing match atop the Great Pyramid of Giza. Houdini soon discovers, however, that the entire argument was merely a ruse designed to lure him into the desert at night and kidnap him. The escape artist is tied up, taken to an unknown location, and dropped down a deep pit. After dreaming of spectacular horrors, Houdini awakens at the bottom of the pit and eventually manages to free himself from the ropes. Suspecting that he is somewhere in a temple under the Great Sphinx of Giza, he travels through the dark in an attempt to find an exit, following what he believes to be a draft from outdoors. Instead, he discovers that he has actually been heading further underground, eventually falling down a flight of stairs and landing in a large ceremonial cavern. There he witnesses an army of half-men, half-animal mummies led by the ancient Egyptian pharaoh Egyptian pharaohs Khafre and Nitocris, leaving offerings to a hippopotamus-sized, five-headed, tentacled beast that appears from a hole deep in the hall.
The monstrosities were hailing something which had poked itself out of the nauseous aperture to seize the hellish fare proffered. It was something quite ponderous, even as seen from my height, something yellowish and hairy, and endowed with a sort of nervous motion. It was as large, perhaps, as a good-sized hippopotamus, and very curiously shaped. It seemed to have no neck, but five separate shaggy heads springing in a row from a roughly cylindrical trunk.
As he escapes, he realizes that this creature is merely the paw of a much larger deity in whose image the Sphinx was carved. Houdini dismisses the event as a hallucination or a dream, consequent of the strains of his kidnapping ordeal, despite the resemblance he sees between Khafre and his guide, Dragoman. Facing financial problems, C.J. Hindenburger, the founder and owner of Weird Tales, wanted to associate the popular Harry Houdini with the magazine in order to boost its readership following the introduction of an Ask Houdini column, as well as the publication of two short stories allegedly written by the escape artist. Hindenburger sought out Lovecraft in February 1924 and commissioned him to write the tale of the supposedly true experience that Houdini had had in Egypt. Lovecraft was paid $100, approximately $1,428 in present-day terms, to ghostwrite the story. At the time, the largest sum he had ever been given as an advance. This was a major factor in motivating him to take the job, as after listening to Houdini's story and researching its background, Lovecraft concluded that the tale was completely fabricated and requested permission from Hindenburger to take artistic license. After receiving clearance from the editor, he began his writing by spending considerable time researching the setting in books issued by the Metropolitan Museum of Art, as well as by frequently visiting the museum's Egyptian exhibits. Lovecraft completed Imprisoned with the Pharaohs in February 1924, but lost his original typescript of the story at Union Station in Providence, Rhode Island, when he was on his way to New York to get married. He was forced to spend much of his honeymoon in Philadelphia retyping the manuscript. The work's original title, The work's original title, Under the Pyramids, is known only from the lost and found advertisement that he placed in Providence in the Providence Journal. The tale was printed in May, June, July 1924 edition of Weird Tales as Imprisoned with the Pharaohs and without credit to Lovecraft in the byline, as Hennenberger thought that this would confuse the readers, as the narrative was told entirely from Houdini's first-person perspective. Lovecraft would later receive credit in the editor's notes of the 1939 reprint. Imprisoned with the Pharaohs became a popular story and was received favorably by Houdini. The escape artist was so impressed that until his death he continued offering the writer jobs and ghostwriting opportunities. Among them was an article criticizing astrology, for which he was paid $75, approximately $1,071 in present-day terms, and a book entitled The Cancer of Superstition, of which Lovecraft had completed an outline and some introductory pages prior to Houdini's 1926 death. To thank the author for his work, Houdini gave Lovecraft a signed copy of his 1924 book, A Magician Among the Spirits. Lovecraft scholar S.T. Joshi praised the tale, calling it surprisingly effective and suspenseful, with a genuinely surprising ending. Science fiction and fantasy author, editor, and critic Lynn Carter, in his 1972 work
Lovecraft,
A Book Behind the Cthulhu Mythos, refers to the story as one of the best things Lovecraft had written up to that time. Imprisoned with the Pharaohs has been cited as an early influence on Robert Bloch, which is particularly evident in his tale Fane of the Black Pharaoh. Although Lovecraft himself refers to the real Sphinx as a god of the dead, Bloch expanded upon the mythos and claimed that the Sphinx in Imprisoned with the Pharaohs was actually Nyarlathotep, an outer godland Lovecraft creation. The idea of a twist ending where a terrible discovery is made worse by the realization that it is only part of a larger horror was used again in The Shunned House, written later that year. In this tale, the protagonist digs into the cellar of the eponymous dwelling, only to find that the thing he believed to be the monster of the tale is only the beast's elbow. The tale of Imprisoned with the Pharaohs, like many of Lovecraft's work, is in the public domain and can be found in several compilations of the author's work as well as on the internet. Harry Houdini died of peritonitis secondary to a ruptured appendix at 1:26 p.m. on October 31, 1926, in room 401 at Detroit's Grace Hospital, aged 52. In his final days, he optimistically held to a strong belief that he would recover. But his last words before dying were reportedly, "I'm tired of fighting." Eyewitnesses to an incident at Houdini's dressing room in the Princess Theater in Montreal give rise to speculation that Houdini's death was caused by a McGill University student, Jocelyn Gordon Whitehead, 1895 to 1954, who delivered a surprise attack of multiple blows to Houdini's abdomen. The eyewitnesses, students named Jack Price and Sam Smilovitz, sometimes called Jack Price and Sam Smiley, proffered accounts of the incident that generally corroborated one another. Price describes Whitehead asking Houdini if he believes in the miracle of the Bible and whether it was true that punches in the stomach did not hurt him. He then delivered some very hammer-like blows below the belt. Ugh. Houdini was reclined on a couch at the time, having broken his ankle while performing several days earlier. Price states that Houdini winced at each blow and stopped Whitehead suddenly in the midst of a punch, gesturing that he had had enough, and adding that he had no opportunity to prepare himself against the blows, as he did not expect Whitehead to strike him so suddenly and forcefully. Had his ankle not been broken, he would have risen from the couch into a better position to brace himself.
Well, he beat that ass of Whitehead. Man, that's lame.
Ugh, such a lame death.
Oh, man.
I've always thought that that particular way for Houdini to go out was just like a man who courts death on a like weekly basis for entertainment and money.
Yeah.
You know, and then he goes out because some asshole assaulted him over religious beliefs is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I think the religious beliefs and the punching thing were two different things.
It's possible.
I don't think he got punched in the stomach. Like, do you believe in God? Pump, pump, pump. I think it was more like, hey, you talk a lot about spiritualism. You talk a lot about this. What do you think about the power of God? Mm-hmm. And then also, Houdini was known. He would.
Yeah, he was known for performing like.
He can take a punch.
Punch me all you want, and I won't flinch. Yeah.
And, you know, he just tightened his strong stomach muscles and go to town, Charlie Brown.
Which is like, yeah, you can have hard enough stomach muscles, you know, abdominal muscles, but you have to actually tighten them.
Yeah. No. And if you're hurt already.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're not in a good position, you're reclined, and you're not expecting
some college kid to. Just pound. Right. Yeah. No, that's such bullshit. I have to say, I do like Imprisoned with the Pharaohs.
I find it to be a really interesting story. And I like the way that it's told from the first person.
Yeah.
It is, of course, like a travel narrative, like travelogue narrative as well. So there's a lot of, and having taken place in 1910, there's a lot of like, you know, stuff about, well, maybe people feel this way now, too. I mean, like, about, like, disappointment in the westernization of of an exoticized locale, which is kind of weird, but...
Hey.
I mean, I don't know. You travel, you expect it to be different.
Yeah. No, I'm sure there's a lot of people that, like, travel to the pyramids, and they're like, hey, what's that city doing right there?
Well, what are all these fidget spinners doing over here, you know? It's like...
I expected it to be a bunch of turbaned men and camels. This doesn't look like 1910.
Right. This isn't like Lawrence of Arabia at all.
Yeah, and I'm sure like the Houdini in this story was expecting it to look like the still photographs and whatnot that he'd seen when he was younger Egypt.
Yeah, and like it's possible also that like people are surprised that Egypt is a Muslim country.
Yeah.
Which it's been for hundreds of years.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a great story. To me, it definitely felt like a travelogue. It kind of felt like at points that maybe HP just was like, oh, I'm going to do a cut and paste from Wikipedia.
Oh man, right? there was this part where Houdini is describing some music and he's like, well, from my understanding of Egypt, of studying Egypt, etology before I got here, I identified them as these three ancient Egyptian instruments. And I'm like...
No, you didn't.
No.
H.P. Lovecraft went to a museum and saw them and wrote about them.
Yeah, and like, plus, like, you can't really identify an instrument you've never heard from its sound. So, that's ridiculous. But this story is rather, I mean, like, while still being rich with description, is lighter on the adjectives than a lot of other H.P. Lovecraft story, so the plot is, you know, a little
bit... moves.
Yeah, it has some... Yeah, exactly. It's a little less stagnant.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing with, like, the faked fight was pretty cute.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot. You know, it's true that sometimes people don't expect...
The Spanish Inquisition?
Well, yeah, that's true. No, I mean, I like the description. Were they fighting on top of the pyramid?
They were fighting. They were boxing on top of the pyramid.
I love that boxing is something that's like an ancient Cairo tradition of settling disputes. Like, come on, Houdini.
Part of me wonders, it's like, okay, did H.P. Lovecraft be like, oh man, I need something for them to do. How do I get them to the pyramid? Okay, I know. I'll write Robert E. Howard. What would Robert E. Howard say? And Robert E. Howard's like, well, you got to make them box on top of the pyramid, son. Because he's from Texas.
Well, I mean, wasn't Houdini a fan of pugilism?
Yes, Houdini was a fan of pugilism.
Yeah,
and I was making a joke because Robert E. Howard was also a fan of pugilism.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just the idea that he would, you know, be like, well, yeah, of course I'm going to go watch you guys box.
Duh.
It's going to happen. It's like, yeah, that's a perfect way to get him into the desert at night.
Yeah, yep. Lure them out with a bunch of shirtless men hitting each other.
I mean, a different character that HP was writing, it very well might have been like to go and look at the stars or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of his main characters are a lot more like intellectual and less physical.
Oh, wait a minute. You have a book I want?
Oh, yeah. Let's go read that book in the middle of the desert at night.
The older person who I think is really cool told me that I need to go out here and do this stuff.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I got to
right
do
now.
It. Oh, I received a bunch of paperwork from a dead relative telling me to go out here.
And the trail led to the top of a pyramid at midnight.
Or telling me not to go out here.
And, yeah.
So my natural curiosity took the better of me.
Oh, man,
I had to go. And then two pages of adjectives.
Yes.
And then I fell down into the pyramid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like the kidnapping aspect, too. Although, what was really interesting to me was so one of the things that's kind of subtle here is that... Houdini is like recognizing that, like he quote recognizes the ancient Egyptian magic or something. Oh God, talk about othering. And then like apparently they're all like, well, what do you mean you're a magician? You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You don't know what the heck you're talking about. And you know, like that. And so we'll make you prove that you're a magician. We'll put you down this hole. And it's later implied or stated that the guide who's, you know, using the Bedouins as his accomplices appears in the cavern under the ceremonial cavern underneath to feed the paw of the beast, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, so do they know what they're doing to him, putting him down a hole? Because he goes into a hole and then he wanders around a bunch. Are they trying to sacrifice him to this paw? What's the deal there? Is it just a challenge to his escape artist credentials? Because that's what they say.
I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of unclear to me.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, and let's talk about that paw real quick.
Oh, yeah. The five-headed.
Yeah, it's the size of a hippopotamus.
Uh-huh.
And
which is pretty dang big.
It has five tentacles.
Yeah.
And then he realizes it's just the paw.
Well, like, my question is, did he use a hippopotamus as a size comparison because he was in Africa?
Yeah. Because otherwise he would have said horse size or a cow.
Yeah.
You know, something that...
I mean, they have cows in Africa, too.
Yeah, and yeah. And no. I think it's more of like kind of an exotic kind of like, oh, there's hippos in the Nile.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, anyway, a hippo-sized paw, and then like it eventually comes out of the cavern, and he realizes that it's... And also, like the paw is eating with its fingers?
Yeah.
So
what I don't get is he's like, oh, yeah, and that was the paw of the thing that the Sphinx is based off of.
Yeah.
I don't remember the Sphinx having tentacle paws.
No, it has, like, lion's paws tucked neatly underneath its breast.
And I'm sure there's people like, well, actually, that's not what the Sphinx originally looked like. The Sphinx has been recarved. And it's like, I don't care about...
Yeah, that's true, but whatever.
Whatever.
So,
we're not here to talk about the Sphinx.
Do you
remember... Here to talk about what's underneath the Sphinx. Here's the thing. It was all a dream. A dream.
Of course it was a dream. Nothing so weird could be real.
No.
Plus he'd had a bunch of weird dreams, right?
Yeah, and plus this is Harry Houdini, and he's not going to tell you a story about how magical or, you know...
Weird, magical, ancient blah-da-blahs are real.
Are real,
because he's such a skeptic.
He goes around disproving that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Harry Houdini is traveling with his wife, but there's no mention of like, and then I, you know, my wife was worried about me.
Yeah.
He's gone all night, possibly into the next day.
Yeah. And as someone who's been married.
Yeah. Wives are worried about stuff.
Wives are worried. It's like, my ex-wife, she was pretty distant to me. She you know, she kind of didn't care what happened to me. But, you know, if I was gone for like a while, she'd like. Probably text
hours,
me a couple of times
because,
she'd be like, hey.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean.
And that kind of, there's stuff that it's like, I don't want to be like, oh, yeah, H.P. Lovecraft's being racist. It's like, no, it's just like poorly informed, I think.
Well, I mean, I think it's a combo. I think that the way that he talks about Arabs in this story is definitely racist and definitely exoticizing and othering a different culture.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, he doesn't, like, talk about, I don't know, the creeping gray filth or whatever of the people. I don't know.
There's no like anti-Muslim sentiment or.
Well, I mean, in this day and age, Muslims weren't viewed as powerful enough to have that. Gas wasn't yet discovered in the Middle East.
True. So. But there was still like the whole like wicked Arab with his scimitar.
Well, yeah. Like, steal your woman away.
The Arab treated like the desert Hun.
Hey everyone, this is DB back again. Just to let you know, I just received recently a Weird Book 39 from Wildside Press, sent to me by the one and only Doug Dra. It's going to have some really cool stories in it. Horror Around the Bend, Franklin Searight. The Tiny Cut by Samson Stormcrow Hayes. Posthumous by Marlene Quaid Cook. Pages from an Invisible Book by the one and only Dale Schweitzer. There's a lot of really good stuff in here. There's some Frederick J. Mayer, Dog Drool. You're going to see a lot of names that you recognize. There's going to be a lot of cool people who you like and a lot of cool people who you're going to like. So, yeah, there's names I haven't heard. And I am really excited to read some of those. And there are some that, here's Pages from an Invisible Book, or part of it, because I don't have permission from Daryl. Read now from the Book of the Memories of Ghosts, which no living hands have ever held, which no living eye has ever gazed upon. But I wrote this. Read. He came in magnificence, as inevitable as the returning tide over flat sand, yet as if awakening from some other state into a dream. His first thought was of the cabin of a sea. His first thought was of a cabin of a ship at sea, a far distant sea, thousands of leagues away. But it came to him slowly, as his mind cleared, and that little heaving wooden room was actually the inside of a coach, bumping at full gallop over a rough road, or no road at all. And it just keeps on going and going and going like that. It's thus declared and written in the Invisible Book, that whatsoever the old emperor dies, that the lords of Tsitsengang Hai return to the castle of 10,000 sides, that Kakuga himself, who lies beneath, might hand his sword to the most appropriate successor. But yeah, you know, standard Daryl Schweitzer stuff. Let's some words from Doug Dra. Through April's doldrums may come your way. They can't stop Weird Book for the thrills of May. Another quarter of a year has gone by, which means that it's time for the newest issue of Weird Book. This issue, as usual, has stories from both old friends and new acquaintances, as is Weird Book's wont. It's been a busy time at Weird Book. I've been reading submissions for Wildside Press's relaunch of Startling Stories. This'll be Weird Book's sister publication. We've received so many stories that I'm a few weeks behind schedule. My apologies to all of you still waiting an answer regarding your story. I've been so busy soliciting stories for this year's themed annual. This year's themed annual will be 100% Cthulhu Mythos. There'll be a special treat from Mr. Crypt of Cthulhu himself, Robert M. Price. Once again, I want to thank you for purchasing a copy of Weird Book. If you're a regular reader, such as me, then you know what to expect, and if you're new to the magazine, then you are in for a very pleasant surprise. And lastly, I want to thank every one of you who submitted to the magazine. Without you, we would be nothing but a pipe dream. Take care, and God bless, Doug Dra. And yeah, no, it's pretty much what you've come to know and love from Weird Book. And I'm super excited about the annual. And as always, it's a lot of really good stories. I haven't read all of them yet, and I haven't gotten through the poems yet. And yeah, I really, really, really love the artwork, as always. It's some of it's the same artwork that you've seen in other ones. There's a demon that I see that I'm like, oh, hey, I remember that from another one. But yeah, no, it's a fun read. It's definitely a fun read. So I highly recommend that you check out Weird Book, go to Wildside Press, or maybe go to the Amazon and check it out. So yeah, Weird Book, 39. Pick it up. Good, good stuff. All right, back to the show.
Okay, so that's going to be it for Harry Houdini and Under the Pyramids, or Entombed with the Pharaohs, or Beneath the Sphinx with the Pharaohs in Egypt with the tentacle hippopotamus hand.
Paw. Jesus Christ. Yeah. So
written by Harry Houdini and H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an enjoyable read.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can listen to that if you check out H.P. No, wait a minute. That's not our podcast.
No, PGTTCM.
PGTTCM. If you go to PGTTCM, we're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher.
Yeah.
We're on YouTube. Yeah. We're on Instagram.
Yeah.
But you can listen to us anywhere you'd listen to a podcast, and we've got all kinds of really cool recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any recordings that you've listened to lately besides this one that you've enjoyed?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's the At the Mountains of Madness read by...
Morgan Scorpion.
That's right, Morgan Scorpion. She's got this great
Morgan
accent.
Morgan Scorpion.
And really, like, good delivery. And she's like, I don't know, like, she's reading this H.P. Lovecraft story about, you know, creeping madness in a little girl voice, which I love the juxtaposition. We've had her on our podcast several times in different recordings. And one of the things I love about, especially about a woman reading H.P. Lovecraft stories, is a lot of his stories don't implicitly, like, they imply that they're by a male, that they're told from a male perspective. But if a woman is reading them, it could be a woman's perspective.
Sure.
And then that leads to, like, a greater, I don't know, like, encompassing. It feels less exclusionary.
Yeah.
More diverse, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I like it. Anyway.
No. I definitely think there are stories that most people, if they hear them, you know, if there's an unnamed protagonist and gender isn't necessarily specified, I personally always just assume it's Randolph Carter.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Because Carter, he was all over the mythos.
Yes, he was. He goes everywhere.
Yep.
Find him in every bit of the mythos.
Yeah, yeah, whether he be riding a zebra, hanging out in a swamp. Randolph Carter, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
You know, his cousin is John Carter, who went to Mars.
Wow. Yeah.
Or at least that's my headcanon.
Uh-huh. I like it. Well, we're kind of, you know, cobbling together some sort of, like, intention of, you know, when stuff happens.
Sure.
And what causes whatnot. So yeah. Why not?
Yeah, and so much of this early science fiction horror was related in one way or the other,
yeah.
Whether it be just influenced by, oh, I saw this in Astounding Tales, and
yeah.
I read that in Spicy Zeppelin Adventures. This has been PGTTCM. This is Sarah and Daniel wishing you a great, great summer. This is going to be almost one of our last episodes of the season, and then we're going to go on a little bit of a hiatus just to build everything up for season 8, where we start the cycle over again, because we have more research materials and more people working on the show and more money coming in, so we can do a better podcast for you.
Yeah.
And if you want to help out the podcast, and if you want to, you know, donate, make sure that we have the resources we need to create this, check out pgttcm.com and hit that donate button, or just go to paypal.me/pgttcm and donate a couple of bucks.
And remember to stay squiggly and keep it weird.